The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, this is our final week of the introductory course in mindfulness meditation. And I just want to say, in case I forget at the end, that while the course ends, the formal introductory course ends, this group meets regularly on Thursday evenings, same time, 7:30. The main difference with the regular meeting is that there's a sitting that begins the meeting from, usually it's a half hour, 35 minute sitting, and then there's a talk and a discussion afterwards. So that will continue, and I'm the main teacher for that group, although for the next 2 weeks I'm away teaching a retreat, so I won't be here for the next 2 weeks, but Temple Smith will be coming for the next 2 weeks, and he's one of my colleagues at Spirit Rock. We teach together at Spirit Rock. So I hope that you'll, if you're interested in continuing exploring the meditation practice, this is an opportunity that's available for you. So it's here for you every Thursday evening at this time. And I wanted to start, as I have been for the last few weeks, by checking in and seeing if you have any questions about your practice, your meditation, any questions about anything you've been noticing during the week. We can start with that. Yeah, over here.
So I tried a little this week noting what my thoughts were, and I think I found that most of them were related to planning kinds of activities.
So future kind of.
Yeah, they were work tasks or jobs at home or things I'd forgot to say in an email or something like that. So all sort of planning out what I should have done. But what I struggled to get in touch with what was the emotion behind that was driving it, you know, other than, you know, is it worry or something like that?
So, I mean, the practice of just noticing what's kind of underneath things, like what's underneath thoughts, or sometimes we can do this with emotions as well. We may find that we have a lot of anger, and then underneath that, we might find there is some other emotion like hurt or something like that. So usually in terms of exploring the layers of experience like that, so the outer layer that you're talking about is the layer of thought, of projecting into the future. And there may be, probably is some kind of emotion under it, maybe not a very strong one. It could be more habit than real emotion. And so you don't actually have to go looking for an emotion. You could just check it out. You know, when there is a lot of recurring thought like that, there often is an emotion underneath it. You may, even if there is an emotion underneath it, you might not notice it right away. So I kind of like to suggest a gentle approach for looking at what's underneath things. If you check in and kind of ask the question, is there something happening underneath? Is there an emotion here? And you don't find anything, just let it go. Just keep noticing. You might notice whether there's any physical experience in the body around these thoughts. Sometimes if I'm in a real strong planning mode, it can feel like my energy is projecting forward, you know, like there's a kind of a bodily energy that's going forward. And it may simply be that if it's kind of more of a habitual kind of thing for you, that that's the way your mind has been thinking a lot for the last few years, you've been practicing planning a lot, it may just be a habit. And in that case, there may not be any particular emotion underneath. It's just kind of the mode that your mind moves to when there's not much else happening. And in that case, it may be that all you need to do is just recognize, okay, planning's happening, let me let that go and come back to the breath. So there's a few options for you to look at it.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mainly wanted to share that I feel like I'm a little bit more aware and conscious of my thoughts than I have been before. And the interesting example that was kind of an aha moment for me was some things happened this week at work, that I felt anxious about. And I had some anxious thoughts about it, but I was able to kind of be aware of it and watch that and kind of let it move through. But then at one point, the anxiety was pretty intense, and I didn't notice, but my mind shifted gears into a completely made-up situation that had no likelihood at all of happening, at all. And I was in that reverie for quite a while, then I went, what? What is that? That was like an imaginary world. And I hadn't ever been quite, since you mentioned it last week, sometimes we just create a completely imaginary thing that, like, the feeling keyed into something that maybe I was afraid of 40 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing what our minds will do. And the fact that you're noticing it is great. I mean, it's like these things happen. They've been happening to us for a long time. And they take us away from here and now, from actually meeting what's happening in this moment. And we've just been clueless.
Yeah, and I mean, my fantasy was much worse than what I was actually dealing with. So
some people have that proclivity. I tend to have that proclivity that my fantasies will construct realities that are disasters, kind of. Other people will tend to construct realities that are the perfect world, you know. It just depends on your...
I do that at other times. So, anyway.
Thank you for sharing.
And I've really been liking the merciful, compassionate approach where, you know, if you get lost in a reverie for a while and you realize it, oh, that's good. You noticed.
You're back. You know, exactly. Yes.
Instead of bang, bang, bang. So, thanks.
We have very little control over our minds when they're lost in that kind of a situation. No control, actually. At some point, the mind will wake up, and in that moment, mindfulness has returned. So, like, celebrate.
A couple of times you've mentioned, you know, identifying with thoughts and identifying with emotions, and I'm having a hard time with what that actually means as a concrete example. Is that the difference between, you know, like noticing what's going on and living what's going on, or what exactly does identifying with?
Well, it's the sense of me of, so for example, there can be an emotion that comes up, and like anger. And it might be around that anger that there's a lot of thoughts about I and me and mine. I'm so angry. They shouldn't have done that to me. So the identification is kind of around, it's like a strengthening of the sense of me. There's also the possibility of recognizing that anger is arising. Oh, anger's coming up. It's not that I am angry. It's that anger has come up. There's causes and conditions that have come together. This situation, my conditioning from my history, has come together to create the arising of anger in this moment. And we can recognize that. And the use of the noting can help this a little bit. If instead of, it's just a subtle shift around the way we connect with our experience. Rather than, I'm angry, it can simply be, anger's happening. And that gives us a different flavor of the experience. It seems to allow us to kind of step back from the experience a little bit so that we're not so tied into... It's kind of... I think of the process of identification as being one around investment in the emotion or thoughts. And there was another word that popped into my mind. Belief. A strong sense of belief. So with thoughts, for example, you know, like this woman mentioned about this fantasy world. When we're lost in that fantasy world, there's a way that we believe it. And there's a kind of a way in which we're in that world and moving around. So there's an identification with that world. So there's a kind of a belief that's going on there. And then when that bubble bursts, it's like, wait a minute, you know, that's not even anything that's likely to happen. And so that identification we kind of step back and there's less identification with that thought. So I would say the sense of investment in and believing are two kind of key pieces. And if you just start looking in your experience about what happens when you, like, for instance, a shift that might begin to happen around observing strong experience, observing a strong emotion. You know, there's certain emotions that we each have, certain habits, certain patterns, certain very familiar patterns that we each have that we tend to think of as, yep, that's me. I'm the miserable person. I'm the lonely person. I'm the depressed person. I'm the sad person. And it's like, that's a really familiar set of clothes we put on. And it's like, yep, that's me. And if we shift that kind of recognition to just being, okay, sadness is arising, loneliness is arising, frustration's arising, anger's arising, whatever is arising, we may start to see that shift and recognize that it's not necessary actually to have that extra sense of investment in the emotion, that that's me. So you may begin to get a sense of what identification is through the actual exploration of this and seeing. Partly we get a sense of what identification is as we start to see it, its tendrils loosen their grip on us. And then we begin to recognize when those tendrils are looser, there's a kind of a different experience of our reality, of our emotions. And then when they come back in and start grabbing us, it's like, oh yeah, I know that feeling. And usually it doesn't feel very good, actually. It's kind of tight. So just keep exploring. So I want to go ahead and start with the guided meditation. So we'll... settle in. Allowing your body to be as relaxed as is possible, and yet alert and upright. You might want to take a couple of deeper breaths. Allowing yourself to connect with the experience of the body, breathing in on the in-breath, the stretching, the expanding, the pulling, the pressure, and then the releasing and relaxing qualities of the out-breath. And taking a few moments to connect with relaxing and releasing tension from your body. Scanning through your body and letting go of any tension you may be holding in your body. Also remembering to check in and see if there can be some relaxation inside the body. Relaxing behind your eyes, inside your throat, relax your heart. Your lungs. Relax your stomach and your intestines. All of your organs. See if you can also let go of any mental tension, any ways your mind is projecting into past or future. Any worries or concerns, seeing if you can let them go. Also relaxing any concern you might have about the present moment. From this place of as much relaxation as you can access in this moment, I'd like to suggest that you open your attention to the experience of hearing. Relaxing and just allowing sounds to appear. The body does the work of hearing, so there's very little you actually need to do. When a sound appears, you'll hear it. So there's no need to strain or try to hear. Just allow the attention to rest. With the field of hearing. Subtle sounds. Sounds outside. The sound of my voice. If your attention wanders into thinking, just noticing when you wake up into that, acknowledging the thinking, noticing whether it's had an impact on you, and allowing your attention to come back to the experience of hearing. Letting go now of the attention to hearing. Allow your attention to come into the field of your body sensations and connect with the experience of breathing. How do you feel the breathing? Where is the breathing most clear to you? Allowing your attention to settle there. You could almost think about receiving the experience of breathing, almost as if you were listening to it. Using the breathing as an anchor for your attention, a place to gather and collect your attention when not much else is happening. And there's no need to hold tightly to that anchor. If other experience becomes obvious or pulls your attention, whether that's sound or other body sensations, emotions or thoughts, it's fine to let go of the attention to breathing and allow the attention to take in that experience, whatever it is. Often when our attention is pulled to another experience, we're already paying attention to it. So just allow the mindfulness to connect a little more clearly with that experience. Attending to it for as long as it's compelling, as long as it's predominant. And if it's no longer so compelling, it doesn't feel like it's pulling at your attention anymore, you can reconnect with the experience of breathing and continue to strengthen your mindfulness with the attention to breathing. And of course, when you notice thinking, acknowledging that. If the pull to thinking is strong, you might check in and see if there's an emotion. Feel in the body how you experience the body with that pattern of thinking. And it's also possible to see if you can let go of the pull to the thinking and reconnect with the experience of breathing. For the last couple of minutes of the sitting, I'd like to suggest an exercise that you resolve or vow to be completely still. And the point of this is not to hold yourself rigid, but more the point is to begin to have the awareness that movement is about to happen before it happens. So if you resolve for stillness, you may happen to notice that your hand is going to move before it moves. Or you may notice the urge to move before you move. Now just for a couple of minutes, play with this, holding your body still, and see what you notice. Today I'd like to talk about what it might mean to bring this mindfulness practice into our daily lives, not just in sitting, but actually right into the midst of what's happening for us in our day. This was actually the first practice that I explored. Somebody sent me a book about mindfulness meditation, and I thought, meditation, I'm not interested in meditation. Probably never be interested in meditation, that's what I thought. And but I was very interested in understanding my mind. I was interested in, because I was in a kind of a very deep state of struggle and suffering. And I could see that it was a lot of contribution from my own mind that created this struggle that I was having. And very little that I had tried worked. And so having received this book, I thought, well, nothing else has worked. Maybe I can try this mindfulness stuff. So it was my very first practice. I did mindfulness in my daily life for about 3 months and had very interesting results for myself. And some of what I'm going to teach tonight grew out of that time. Some of the first things that I practiced with are some of the things that I offer when I teach about practice in daily life. And after 3 months or so, I thought, wow, maybe the reason they call it practice when they talk about sitting is because it's practice so that you can see things in your daily life better. And that was my motivation to start meditating. It was because I found it so valuable to be mindful in my daily life that I wanted to support that with the sitting practice. So I'd just like to start by contrasting a little bit the sitting practice with the daily life practice, and one of the reasons why it's so hard to practice in daily life. It is incredibly difficult to remember to be mindful when we're in the midst of our day, doing things, engaging in our work, talking with our partners, getting ready for work, coming home, making dinner. It's hard to actually remember. And actually, the word for mindfulness, the Pali word for mindfulness, which is sati, is rooted in the word for memory. So actually, mindfulness is about remembering. And if we can remember about mindfulness, that's the large part of the battle, because it is quite difficult to remember. I remember when I first introduced to mindfulness, I was in my 20s. I picked up a book by Thich Nhat Hanh called Miracle of Mindfulness, which is a great book. I really enjoyed the book. And each evening I'd be reading this book and I'd be inspired, and it sounded like, this sounds great. You know, I think I'm going to try this tomorrow when I go to work. And the next time I remembered it was the next night when I picked up the book. And after a few days of that, I basically said, well, obviously I can't do this. I mean, I put it down. And I didn't pick up mindfulness again. I didn't really meet mindfulness again or meditation practice for another 15 years. So one of the first things I want to encourage is to not have that idea when you see how hard it is, or see that you go days without even remembering about mindfulness. To not believe the thought, I can't do this. Because that thought may come, and it's not true. It's not a true thought. If you believe the thought and act on the thought, it will become a self-fulfilling prophecy. But it is not a true thought. We can engage, and there are ways to engage. In our sitting practice, we have some supports to help us remember. I mean, how many of you noticed in this sitting that your minds wandered off? Okay, yeah. I think pretty much everybody's hand should go up. So, it's even hard enough in our sitting practice to have the mind be present the entire time. But we do have some supports. We're sitting still, our eyes are closed. And we wake up into the middle of a thought, we're at work, we're, having an argument with a coworker, and we wake up and it's like, oh, I'm sitting here still in the meditation hall. I guess I'm not having an argument with my coworker. And we come back. So we have the support of the sitting posture, the closed eyes, that helps us to remember. You know, that remembering piece, this is the key. And then we also cultivate this anchor for our attention, staying with the breathing. And we can begin to recognize or notice when we're not with the breathing. So there's some supports in our sitting practice that help us to remember. We lose every one of those supports when we move into daily life practice. We're not usually anchoring our attention on the breathing because we're engaged in so many other things. Our eyes aren't closed. We're going through the world. We're not sitting still. We're in movement. So it's very difficult to remember. So I find it helpful. I mean, often there's a teaching, that people teach. Well, try to apply this to your daily life. But they don't say too much about how to actually do that. And through my own practice, I have found the daily life practice to be one of the most interesting and fruitful areas of exploration. And I just got creative around ways to help myself do that. And those ways that I helped myself do that, these are what I'm going to offer you as supports, as tools for practicing in daily life. These are not the only ones. I just made these up, you know. It's not like there's anything special about these things, except that they worked for me. And I have actually seen them work for a lot of other people now, too, since I've been teaching them. So they do work, these tools that I'm going to offer. But be creative. Find ways for yourself to connect with practice in daily life. So one of the first things that I find to be really helpful, and I just kind of stumbled into this, actually, in that first 3 months when I was practicing in daily life, I decided that I was going to... I got the idea from somewhere, one book that I read. I thought it was one of Joko Beck's books, but I haven't been able to find the little place in those books, so I can't actually tell you where I found this advice. The advice that I read in a book early in my practice was, rather than going into your day trying to be mindful of the whole day, pick some tasks, pick some projects that you will choose to try to be aware of. And so that was my approach. I picked a couple of projects for myself. And one of them that I picked was just something that happened to me regularly through my day. Something that happened like 2 or 3 times an hour. This ended up being a really good kind of thing to pick for a daily life activity to practice. It happened. It was a short thing. It just kind of came and went really fast. And it happened a lot through my day. And so I picked that as something to pay attention to. And so I'm going to call this thing essentially what I was talking about earlier, that we lose all these supports for mindfulness, for remembering mindfulness. We lose those supports in our daily life. And what I'm going to suggest is that you pick something that will help serve as kind of like a reference point for you to recognize how much are you not mindful, how much are you mindful through your day. And by picking something that happens regularly through your day, you will begin to get a sense of how much you're lost in thought and how much you are present. And my guess is that when you initially start doing this, what you'll notice most is that you're not remembering. You're not remembering anything at all about this project, this task. Now, this task that I'm suggesting, something that happens regularly through your day, I'll give you some suggestions. I picked something that I was doing on the computer because I sat in front of a computer all day. And so you could pick something like that, something like, you know, clicking send for an email or closing a window or clicking on an application on your computer. If you're in front of the computer for the bulk of your day, of your work day, you could pick some activity on the computer that you do regularly to serve as this kind of thing, this reference point that you intend to try to be aware of. This is basically what the suggestion is. Pick something to try to be aware of, to try to remember to be aware of. So picking something on the computer. Other ones that people tend to do pretty frequently are standing up or sitting down. If you walk a lot, you might pick something like going through doorways. You could pick opening drawers if you do that a lot. There's just picking something, seeing if you can connect with something that happens pretty regularly through your day. Maybe checking your device. We all have these devices now, right? We pick them up and check them a lot. So that might be something, you know, be mindful when you look at your iPod or iPhone or cell phone or whatever device you have. The touching of that device, maybe the touching of any device could be another one. So something that you do regularly through your day. Now the intention here is to just see, can you remember to be mindful of that? And mostly what you'll find, especially in the first few days, is that you don't remember. You don't remember until you're like driving home at night and you think, oh, I said I was going to pay attention to that thing and I didn't remember once today. Now that moment when you remember that you forgot all day long, that moment, it's kind of like the moment where I, when picking up the book, remembered that I hadn't done it all day long, and I basically said, well, obviously I can't do this. Don't buy into that belief. Actually, that moment when you remember that you've forgotten all day long, that moment is a moment of mindfulness. And in that moment, just acknowledge, okay, well, I'm awake now. You know, here I am now. Mindfulness has returned. I somehow managed to remember that I'd forgotten all day. So mindfulness is present. Just take in that moment what you're aware of. Are you tight, tense, at ease, relaxed? Is your mind constricted or at ease? Just in a very light way, take in what's happening for you that at that moment. It doesn't have to be a heavy thing. Another big area to learn about in daily life practice is to not pick up this this practice as like something extra that we add to our day. We often thinking, okay, I'm going to do this daily life practice. It's like picking up a heavy backpack and carrying it around with us. And I often hear people say, I just don't have time to be mindful in my daily life. And you know, that's with the idea or the belief that mindfulness is something extra we're adding in. But this moment of remembering, this moment of waking up, that didn't weigh anything. It's just a moment that spontaneously happened. If you can connect with and recognize in that moment, oh, I'm mindful, you don't need to try to hang on to the mindfulness there. Just notice what you can. What's obvious about that moment? Just in a very light way, take in what's happening. So in that moment when you remember about your reference point, that task that happens regularly through your day, take in what's happening and then reconnect with your intention to try to remember that task. That's actually an important part of this practice. And it doesn't have to be a big deal. It's just kind of like, okay, I forgot. Here I am. I'm noticing what's happening right now. And I'm just going to keep trying. I'm just going to keep trying to do this. If you engage in this way, you'll start to recognize probably over the next couple days that you're remembering that you've forgotten more times. You'll remember 5 or 6 times through the day instead of just when you're going home at night. You'll remember more times that you've forgotten. Now, it may not have anything to do with the task. You know, maybe the task is reaching for things and you're walking down the street and it's like, oh, I forgot about that. You know, that mindfulness, again, it's just that we recognize now that we have forgotten. And we may remember more times through the day. That gives us more moments of mindfulness through the day. More acknowledgement of, oh, here I am. And then keep recommitting to that task. Over time, it will start to kind of, the mindfulness, the remembering about that task will start to get closer to the actual task. The very first time I did this, I remember, you know, it was maybe 3 or 4 days. I don't remember how long it was, but it kind of unfolded in this way. And then one day, it was like I had picked something on my computer. I was doing something on my computer. And one day, I realized like a few moments after I had done that thing on my computer, oh, I just did it. And I didn't notice it right then, but I noticed it. We noticed it kind of closer in proximity in time to the actual event. And I actually took that as encouragement. It's kind of like I began to see that the attention, the mindfulness was getting closer to that experience. And then one day, I actually noticed it right as it was happening. And at that point, what I found interesting is that once I started kind of connecting to it as, you know, right when it happened, it's like what happened was that thing that I was doing then became a kind of a mindfulness bell for me. That I would be just kind of lost in thought, and then I'd go to do that activity on the computer, and it would wake me up to do that. So this began to pull kind of more of a thread of mindfulness through my day. So this is a kind of a powerful way to just get little moments of mindfulness in a light way. I mean, it's not like we're picking up something heavy here. I really, really want to stress the light touch to mindfulness in daily life, because if I don't, you're going to give up. I've seen a lot of people do that. So just the light touch. So as you start to recognize this remembering, the other piece that's interesting is that, you know, the first part of this practice that I described was really about just recognizing that you had remembered, right? It had nothing to do with the task. It was just like recognizing that you remembered. Over time, with this kind of practice, we begin to get familiar with what it feels like for mindfulness to come back in daily life. We get familiar with this in our sitting practice when we wake up and recognize, oh, I'm lost in thought. This experience of waking up and becoming mindful actually happens to us a lot in our day. It happens way more than you realize. What happens is that it's such a subtle and quick experience, subtle, quick moment of noticing what's happening in the present moment, and we immediately leap onto what we've noticed in the present moment and start doing things or thinking about it. We notice a person walking by our office, and then we recognize, oh, that's that person I need to talk to. And then we're off in the thought about the needing to talk to that person, and we have completely missed the fact that we actually recognized that we were mindful or aware that we noticed somebody walking by. So this moment of mindfulness, these moments of recognizing what's happening in the present moment, being aware of what's happening while it's happening, happens a lot through our day. But it's a subtle kind of experience, and we're not attuned to it. And so when we start to practice this way, using this reference point and beginning to recognize these moments of remembering in our day, we start to get attuned to what it feels like to be mindful. And then we can start to recognize these moments of mindfulness that just happen to us all the time. We're walking across the street and suddenly we wake up realizing, oh, I'm walking across the street. And we're present for a moment. This also brings in this light touch of mindfulness, because the moment of remembering is effortless. You cannot even do it. You're lost in thought, right? I mean, you can't even, in the place of being lost in thought, you can't decide in that lost in thought, oh, I'm going to be mindful now. Mindfulness just comes back spontaneously. And so if we can begin to key into, to touch into what it feels like for that mindfulness to come back spontaneously, we start engaging in an effortless mindfulness practice, because those moments of mindfulness don't take any struggle for us at all. It's just a matter of recognizing them. What we often do in that moment then is try to pick up the backpack. It's like, oh, mindfulness has come back. Oh, mindfulness, I can pick this up and do it now. I don't recommend that in daily life. We can do that in our sitting a little bit. You know, we're not doing anything else. So there's nothing else that's taking our attention. In daily life, we have other things we need to do. So recognize these moments of awareness returning and then get on with your day. You may notice these moments beginning to kind of linger or kind of spill over. At least this is what happened for me, that over time, the moments of mindfulness just began to kind of very naturally and organically expand. So this practice of choosing a reference point, very powerful in beginning to explore mindfulness in daily life with this light touch. You can pick other kinds of mindfulness projects too. I'm just going to offer you a few that I've worked with. I think this first one of the reference point, I find to be one of the most powerful ones, because it is a light practice. It doesn't take too much effort, and it also begins to pull this thread of mindfulness through the day. But some other things that I've used. The task that I suggested you use was something that you initiate. I didn't actually highlight that, but I'd like to suggest for that reference point task that it be something that you are initiating, as opposed to something that you're responding to. So, for instance, the phone ringing would be responding to something. Those are also fine things to put into your day, but there is a reason why I suggested it's an activity that you're engaging in, and I'll talk more about that in a few minutes after I've gone through some of these other ways to be mindful. So, other ways that you can support yourself, computers are great. You can even get these nice, you can download these nice, sounding bells that you can have ring every 15 or 20 minutes to help you just have a moment, take a breath when you notice that sound. Having friends text you at random times during the day, be aware. Let the phone ring 3 times before you pick it up. And in that 3 rings, let yourself let go of whatever you were doing and be in your body. This has a great benefit for the relationship to the person on the other end of the phone. You'll actually be there for them when you pick up the phone. Also, another thing I like to suggest is, the thing that I suggested was something kind of short that happens regularly, reaching for things, walking through doorways, clicking send for an email, something that just takes a split second. You can also pick some longer things, maybe something that you do once a day or twice a day, like brushing your teeth or washing dishes or emptying the dishwasher or making your bed or the whole process of getting ready to go to work in the morning, the showering and the brushing your hair or whatever, making that whole time, anything from, 3 minutes to 6 or 7 minutes of time. And having that be something that you also kind of choose to be attentive for. With that kind of project being longer like that, you'll have the opportunity probably to see your mind wander and come back a few times. In 3 minutes or so, you probably have that opportunity to notice, you're brushing your teeth, paying attention to the experience of brushing your teeth, and you notice that your mind wanders off into planning for what you're going to make for breakfast or whatever. So you may notice that. You may notice it coming and going. Just when you notice the mind wandering, come back to the experience that you're doing. With the chores like that, I like to suggest for people that you help yourself remember, because again, we will forget. It is so hard to remember in daily life, and I really want to stress that, because I don't want you to feel discouraged. It is really hard, but it is doable, and just knowing that it's hard, I hope, helps you not feel so discouraged when you notice how much you forget. You will forget a lot. So I like to suggest people put reminders in the places wherever they're doing their chores. Put a yellow sticky on the bathroom mirror if you're doing, toothbrushing, or, a big sign, be mindful, by your kitchen sink if you're doing dishwashing, or a sign on your dishwasher if you're doing unloading dishes. Find some way to help you remember. It's not cheating to put signs around. With daily life practice, another thing for this extending mindfulness for a longer period of time, this also gives us a little bit of an opportunity to begin to recognize what it would mean to be mindful in the midst of activity. Simple activities, I'm suggesting, but they do take some thought, Like I have one of these electric toothbrushes that beeps every, 30 seconds, and I'm supposed to change the part of my mouth, right, where I'm brushing. So there needs to be some engagement with the task that you're doing. So there's some part of your mind that's paying attention to the content of what you're doing. This is another big difference between daily life mindfulness and mindfulness in sitting practice. Because largely in the sitting practice, we do let go of content. Thoughts arise, and we may make a note of whether it's planning or remembering or daydreaming, but we try to not get involved too much in the content of the thinking. In our daily lives, we need to be involved with the content of our thinking. And if we have the idea that we cannot be mindful while we're thinking, there's going to be large parts of our day where we're not mindful. And so this is a beginning where we begin to explore what does it mean to be engaging with an activity and be aware of it. One of my teachers, one of my Burmese teachers, his name is Sayadaw Utejaniya, his emphasis is very much on mindfulness and activity. And he suggests that we practice a kind of a, he calls it a 50-50 mindfulness. 50% of the attention on what you're doing and 50% of the attention on what you're experiencing in your mind and body. So that we're beginning to learn how to be aware and present and mindful, engaging in activity. This will really serve you in being able to be aware in the midst of conversations and being able to be aware as you're driving down the freeway so that you're not getting agitated by people cutting you off. So this will serve you to begin to practice in this kind of a longer way. I have a couple more, but I want to move on, and I'll come back to them if I have a chance at the end. First, I want to check in and see if there's any questions about what I've said. So I've offered you a lot, so just take a break here. Yeah. Uh-huh.
In your experience with like being mindful during a task, like brushing your teeth or washing the dishes, do you find if it makes any difference if it's a task that you like or dislike?
Well, with brushing my teeth, actually, I didn't think it was something I either liked or disliked much. But what I discovered was that there was a lot of impatience in my mind while I was brushing my teeth. You know, that it's like, you know, I've got better things to do than brush my teeth, or so I thought. So I didn't.
Yeah, that's part of my.
On the surface of it, I didn't think there was any resistance to brushing my teeth, but I actually discovered in the process, you know, no, there's some impatience here. So I don't really think it matters too much. You might pick something that feels relatively neutral for yourself and then see what happens. If it's something you really dislike, well, I mean, I can see benefits of that as well. I mean, if you really dislike something, then, you know, actually getting interested in it, what is it that you dislike about this? You know, what part of it is so unpleasant? You know, so I just play with it and look for yourself. I mean, this is part of the creativity of daily life practice. For yourself, see what works. If picking things that are difficult works, great. If you're picking things that are difficult, you find yourself avoiding being mindful, don't go there. Pick something else.
Yeah. Thanks.
I have a testimonial for mindfulness, if you don't mind. A few months ago, I saw the movie The Artist, which is a silent film that won the best Oscar, you know, winner. And when I first saw it, I didn't like it. You know, it didn't have much sound. It's a silent film. And then I told myself I should be mindful when I see this film. And immediately my experience changed. It became a very profound movie. And I started to cry. You know, it touched me deeply. So I think being in our daily life, there are a lot of profound moments that we miss because we are expecting stimulations of a certain kind. But when we are mindful, we can receive the profoundness.
And that's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Did you? Yeah. Back here.
I kind of have experienced the opposite of that. You just made me think of it. And I don't know if this is normal. I'm curious if you've experienced something similar. But trying to be mindful about my daily life, I found that things that are very stimulating are kind of overwhelming, like listening to a really catchy song or like eating something that tastes really good is like too much. Uh-huh. And I don't know if if that's related.
Sometimes that can happen. Sometimes it's because we're kind of on the edge of, you know, we're so overstimulated in our culture. You know, it can be that we're just on the edge, and then being really aware, we see, oh my gosh, you know, I am just overloaded here. You know, so it may be highlighting that you're kind of overloaded in your life, that bringing the mindfulness in. And so you might, instead of saying, oh, I shouldn't be mindful while I'm listening to this catchy song, maybe turn off the radio instead. exploring if that is the part of the reason why it's so challenging. Other times, it can happen through deeper practice as we engage in, like when I went on retreat once, I kind of entered into this space where I was really present, and it was like, it was overwhelming just to hear a frog croak. And I was like, it was just so intense to hear a frog croak. And then they all started, and it was like, I just lost it. So there can be times, states of meditation, where that happens also. But since you're talking about it happening in daily life, my guess is that it's more that you're just kind of overstimulated. It also may be that you're pushing a little much in, you use the word trying to be mindful. And so, you know, backing off the trying and just seeing, can you just notice what's already here? A question I sometimes explore for myself, if I feel like I'm pushing too hard to be mindful, is how little effort does it take to be mindful right now? How little energy do I need to put in to actually notice this chocolate ice cream or whatever I'm eating? So those are some other things to explore.
Thank you.
Okay, so there's some other pieces I want to talk about. And one is related to this idea of why I suggested to pick something that you're initiating to do. It's also related to the part of the guided meditation where I suggested that you kind of resolve to be still. In that time, in those couple of minutes, did any of you notice a kind of urge to move before the movement happened? If you raise your hands if you noticed that. Okay, at least some of you noticed that. That's a good exercise to do from time to time in your meditation to kind of begin to key into that moment of knowing that you're about to do something. This moment, this is an amazing moment actually in our minds. Because we have this self-reflective capacity, we can see, our minds can know we're going to do something before we do it. We can know we're going to move our bodies before they move. We can know we're going to speak before we speak. We can even know, this sounds odd, but we can even know we're going to think before the thought arises. And we can know that an emotion is kind of coming up before the emotion is actually here. We can see ourselves heading in the direction of that emotion before the emotion is here. So this moment of seeing that we're about to act is kind of a key moment in our experience. In and of itself, that intention to do is neutral. It's just a kind of an impulse to do. But it is always accompanied with a motivation, a reason why we're going to do that thing. And usually that motivation has come up and it has actually prompted this intention to move. So for example, you're sitting at your desk, at a workplace. You've been sitting there for a while. And then there's the recognition that thirst arises. So there's thirst that comes up. And there's the wish or the need, or, you know, the body is saying, you know, I need some water. And so from that motivation of needing to get water, the impulse to move comes up, and we get up and go get some water. Now, that's a pretty neutral unfolding of a scenario. You know, the motivation for getting up from your chair in that situation was simply that you needed a drink. There are many other reasons why that you might have arisen from your chair. For instance, you may have been fighting with a computer program for the last 2 hours, and now you're just so frustrated that you want to toss your computer out the window. And that's why you get up, out of anger and frustration. So there are different reasons in the mind why that action might happen. Same action, you stand up from your chair. Different motivation in the mind. The Buddha pointed to that pair of the intention and the motivation as being a key to our where we can move ourselves in the direction of happiness. Because what tends to happen when we're not mindful, our choices, our decisions are kind of made by our habits and patterns, are the ways that we've done things in the past, the kind of grooves we've worn in our mind. Our choices are made by our habits and patterns. If we're not mindful, those choices are kind of made by what we've done in the past. When we are mindful, when we are aware, we can begin to recognize, oh, I'm about to do this thing. And see, oh, here's the motivation. Why am I going to do this? The Buddha suggests that if we act when our motivation is out of aversion or greed or confusion, that the results ultimately are not going to serve us that well with respect to our inner life, our inner happiness. Now, it may serve us quite well in the moment of getting something that we want, having something that we want in the moment. But what that tends to do when we act on motivations of aversion, of greed, act on motivations of anger, of frustration, of eagerness, of boredom, of confusion, it tends to reinforce anger, confusion, boredom, frustration, confusion. You're practicing what you act on, essentially. So the suggestion is that if you can begin to notice these moments of choosing to act and see the motivation that's accompanying it, we at that point, because we haven't taken the action yet, we actually can have a choice. We can start to choose not to act when the motivation is unskillful, unhelpful for us in terms of our inner happiness, and act when the motivation is skillful. Act when it's acting. We can act out of compassion, out of generosity, out of kindness, out of friendliness. So if we can begin to choose more skillfully, we are heading ourselves in the direction of happiness. We're cultivating those beautiful qualities. We're cultivating friendliness. We're cultivating compassion. We're cultivating generosity instead of anger, aversion, frustration. So a good place to play with this is in the area of speech. I think pretty much everybody has had a situation where they've said something and wished it hadn't come out of your mouth. So a practice I like to suggest for people is to see if you can just notice. Actually, the way I like to phrase it, pause before you speak. Just take a brief pause before you speak. That in itself is hard to do, because if you pause before you speak, you've actually caught the intention to speak. If you can hold yourself back for a split second, you know that you're going to speak before you speak. So if you can even do that, if you can even pause before you speak, you're beginning to see this intention that's coming up in your mind. And in that brief pause, you will probably have some idea of what you're going to say and possibly a little bit of the motivation behind it. So you may be able to see, oh, you know, this is kind of thing that's going to come out of my mouth, you know, it's got a spin to it. It's got a little barb on it. Maybe I should not say that thing or not say it that way. So playing with this, you know, this area of speech is a really interesting one to explore, this area of intention. Now, as you see this, as you start to look at your intentions, especially around speech, start to play with this, you know, we begin to see how much of our motivations are not so helpful, how much we act out of aversion and hostility and, you know, wanting things for me, me, me. So we find actually our minds are a minefield of unhelpful tendencies. Now again, this is actually, I think of this as good news that we see it, because if we don't see it, we are just kind of walking in that minefield all day long and setting off those explosions. When we see them, at least we have the chance to begin to not step there, not go there. So the starting to see what our minds are doing, sometimes it's not good news. One teacher, I think it was a Tibetan teacher, said, you know, mindfulness practice is one insult after another. We just, you know, get to see what our minds are doing. But the very seeing of it, if we can take some sense of encouragement from the fact that at least we're seeing it. You know, it was going on before. It's not that the mindfulness has made this happen. It's been going on. And wouldn't you rather know than not know? I hope the answer is yes to that. And with this, the practice, the training, we can begin to wake up more and more for these moments of choice and begin to choose skillfully. But it's not something to beat yourself up for, either the finding of these unskillful motivations or the fact that you notice the intention and the thing comes out of your mouth anyway. You notice that there's this unpleasant, you know, unskillful thing going to come out of your mouth, but plack, comes out anyway, kind of like vomiting, you know. Sometimes the momentum of our habits is so strong that the mindfulness that we have access to in that moment isn't quite strong enough to really meet it. And so be compassionate with yourself about the fact that you will act on unskillful motivations. Even seeing them, you will. I know that I do and have done a lot of this practice, and still, from time to time, that happens. And it happens a lot at the beginning. So be kind to yourself about this. It's not about beating yourself up. Let's see. So a couple more pieces, and then I'll open it up for some more questions. There are two qualities of mind that I think help to remind ourselves of with daily life practice, because it is so challenging. And these two qualities are patience and resolve. Patience is necessary with daily life practice, because it is so difficult, because you will forget over and over again. It's a gradual shift of our minds from the momentum of busyness to having mindfulness in our daily lives. So patience with the fact that it is so difficult. Keep gentle persistence going. And resolve, because without resolve, you'll basically give up. You know, that gentle persistence can be coupled with a sense of, yep, I'm just going to keep trying. And it doesn't have to be a, I'm just going to keep trying. It's, you know, I'm just going to keep trying. I'm just going to keep trying. A kind of a friendly resolve. That resolve, every time you realize you've forgotten, a kind of a friendly, okay, just going to keep trying. Just going to keep trying. So, any other comments or questions about, yeah.
I guess it's more of a comment than question. I feel like, for example, if there's some emotion that I'm exploring, you know, anger or frustration, if I'm just noticing, I'm just mindful about it, then it may still be coming back and I'm just noticing, you know, anger is happening. Whereas if I think about it and I analyze it, then I can actually find a way to deal with it and I'm sort of at peace. So many times I actually find it more helpful to analyze it and, like, solve it rather than, you know, just experience. Do you have anything to say about that?
I know what you're saying, and the there are times that's really helpful. You know, it's almost like you can bring in wisdom to the equation. It's like, yep, I'm experiencing this anger, and, you know, I really see that person didn't intend to do that. So, you know, I can let this go. You know, so we can kind of coach ourselves in a way to find a more balanced relationship with some of our emotions. In daily life, that is a very helpful tool. I didn't talk about working with emotions in daily life so much. In sitting practice, I'd suggest that you see if you can let go of the analysis and the trying to fix it, because sometimes, you know, sometimes what I've seen is that there's something happening. So there's some surface thing happening that, you know, maybe there's anger or something, and there's some kind of obvious perhaps cause of that. You know, that person said that thing and it made me angry. And so, you know, I can tell myself, oh, it's not about them. And, you know, there's something, you know, it's related to the way, you know, my father treated me when I was a child. And, you know, we can kind of begin to let it go a little bit. But that kind of analysis doesn't actually allow us to move into the terrain of the experience and learn from it from inside. So an example, a kind of an example, I'm going to kind of fudge it because I want to shorten things. So in noticing depression, for instance, you know, there might have been a kind of an obvious reason for the depression. You know, the initial obvious thing was that I was in a situation where people were pairing up and I wasn't paired up. And there was a sense of, oh, you know, always not paired up and, you know, taking me back to when I was in third grade and left alone on the swings when everybody else was with other friends, you know. So, okay, this was the, you know, the kind of obvious reason why depression was happening in that moment. And I could have, you know, related to it from that perspective, but I chose to just, can I be with this feeling? Can I be with this experience of depression? And it began to kind of unfold and untangle in a way. There were some deeper things underneath, some deeper feelings of, you know, some fear, some other experiences that weren't seen initially with that initial exploration of just seeing the people and noticing the depression. So just being with it, just noticing. Just being with it. And what I actually found underneath the entire pattern was, and this shocked me actually, when I finally could be completely and totally with that feeling of depression and allow it, it kind of felt like it got really big. You know, that feeling of depression just felt like it grew. And at some point, the feeling flipped and became the feeling of love. It was as if there was something really, it wasn't as if there was something really beautiful underneath that pattern. And if I had been working at it from this perspective of, can I just fix this and be at ease around the outer level of it, I never would have seen into the middle, where there was something really beautiful inside. And that was a kind of a transformation around that pattern. Because when in seeing that, in coming into the middle of it, somehow, and I don't even know how these things unfold actually, I can't tell you why this would happen, but the depression stopped coming up after that point, in that time. This was a 6-week period. I was in a monastery where this was coming up. So after that insight into kind of the feeling of love underneath, and actually the next thing that happened for me in feeling that love underneath, the next thing that happened that I saw, there was this beautiful, expansive feeling of love and connection. The very next thought in my mind was, this is stupid. This is sappy. And I could see that the mind didn't really have that this was kind of the place where the rub was around this depression. It was like that depression was kind of like not really being willing to acknowledge this feeling of open-hearted connection. So there's a lot that we can learn through this exploration. So I just encourage it some. And as I said, in daily life, it can be very skillful to kind of navigate and manage our way through our day. But there are also things that we can learn, kind of very beautiful discoveries that we can make. Any other comments or questions? Yeah, here.
So that was a very interesting answer, and that links to the question that I had in mind. I found that when I'm trying to practice, not when I'm trying to practice mindfulness in daily life, but when it comes up, it has kind of a negativity bias. So I'm not trying to practice it consciously or intentionally, but it comes a lot when there are feelings that I want to get rid of.
Okay, yes.
So when I'm very nervous because I'm going to do public speaking, for example, or if I'm bored and I have to walk, I'm going to do walking meditation. Or if I'm angry, then I'm going to look at my thoughts. I'm going to try to connect with the emotions underneath the thoughts. But I feel a very strong negativity bias. So I really want to just get rid of all those emotions. And it just reminded me that something that I had understood in listening to you, so in previous talks, that emotions do not kill us. And it's also good sometimes just to stay with the emotions and realize that they're not going to kill us. They're just emotions.
Yes. But, and they will flow through. And yeah, they can sometimes uncover something that we didn't know underneath. Now, this negativity bias that you talk about, we may tend to have a bias in that way. I also have that negativity bias. And in some ways, you know, that negativity bias is one that it said it actually supports us because we're waking up in the unpleasant and we are motivated to practice with it. But one of the things I actually found helpful for myself too with that negativity bias, because you know the very first project that I picked, these two projects, this thing on the computer, and the other project I picked was anger, because anger was like ruining my day. I was becoming non-functional at times, and that was a challenging project. You know, that was the negative project. You know, that was the one where I didn't feel good when I woke up into mindfulness in that anger. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, how do I deal with this? I have no idea what it even means to be mindful when I'm this angry. So there was that side of it where you're waking up into difficulty. The other project that I picked, which was the computer project, that was neutral. And I see in retrospect that it was really, you know, it was fortuitous for me that I did that, because it gave me a little bit of a sense of what it means to be mindful when I'm not miserable. So I encourage you in the area of the reference point to begin to kind of balance out that negativity bias so that mindfulness does begin to come up at other times. Or you recognize that it comes up at other times too.
And I wanted also to add one more comment about like pausing before we speak. So I heard a very nice acronym recently, WAIT. Why am I talking?
Yes.
So it's the acronym for...
That's good. So we need to stop. So thank you all for coming. This has been a lovely class. I've enjoyed being with you for these 5 weeks. And I'll be here back in 2 weeks, or 3 weeks. I'm away for 2 weeks. I'll be back in 3 weeks. And, you know, from my perspective, things just continue. So you're welcome to join us.